Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, welcome to yet another episode of Rahalastava, this time with the amazing Sophie Duca. Remember, you can catch these Rahalastavas live most Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on twitch.tv/rkherring. Just taking a couple of weeks off because we've got a few in the bag, but we'll be back very soon. Every Thursday, you can watch Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun at 8 p.m. And usually Mondays about 7:30, Me One versus Me Two Snooker. There may be more stuff to come. It's all very worth having a watch. RK Herring. Twitch.tv/RK Herring. That's how you find me. And if you're with Amazon Prime, remember you can link your accounts and give me £5 every month at no extra cost to yourself. That would be very nice if you can be asked. We've also got another Kickstarter running. The profits are not going to us, but we're going to donate all profits to live comedy to help live comedy go through this difficult situation. So we'll be donating it to some comedy clubs. It's snooker based. You can get this amazing Punani sticker album and 40 stickers to collect, plus lots of other extras, including cool T-shirts, a donkey T-shirt, and look at that, and all sorts of other stuff. Rahalastava.co.uk/Kickstarter. We have to hit the target or we don't get any money. I would very much like to exceed the target, which is £20,000. We're doing pretty well. It's ticking along, but if you feel like donating a little bit of cash just to help out live comedy or to get some of these fabulous rewards, rahalastava.co.uk/Kickstarter. Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastava with Sophie Duca. Thank you for watching and listening. Goodbye. Hello! Please welcome a man who's back from holiday. It's Richard Herring. Thank you. I'm very hot. Welcome. I put this shirt on fresh. Look at it. It's already streaking with sweat. I've only been here for mere seconds. Please welcome, very welcome to Richard Herring's Leaving Seagulls Titbits podcast. Though I was hanging out at the Smuggler's Adventure in Hastings. It's like a network of caves that go underneath Hastings that the pretending smugglers used to inhabit. Well, there's no evidence of that whatsoever, but it's a way of making a living. And Hairy Jack there, he's a man who appears in the videos, is a sort of ghost smuggler figure who looks very much like the actor Kevin Eldon. I reckon it was recorded in about 1999. Anyway, he, the ghost, told me he calls it Rahalastava, so hope that's going to stop saying that, you people are down there. Hope that's going to catch on. Yeah, I've been on holiday. I've been away for a while, and we missed a couple of weeks, but don't forget to subscribe, people. I noticed the subscribers have gone down in my absence, so if you're with Amazon Prime, do remember you can subscribe and give us some money at no cost to yourselves by linking your accounts, and remember to come back every month and subscribe. It's a great way to help us make more podcasts, but the holiday was great. I did meet a friend of mine who I didn't know, but she's an expert on herring gulls. I mean, just coincidentally, it's nothing to do with me particularly, with seagulls, which is why we'd been down on Hastings. We went to the aquarium in Hastings, and then we obviously then went to have fish and chips. That's what you do after you've just looked at some fish. And we then had these seagulls came down, were trying to eat our fish and chips, and we dropped some by accident, and they all hoovered it up. It was amazing. But she's an expert on seagulls and rescues seagulls, and she told me what you have to do, and I can't believe this is true, but she seems such an expert, is you locate the main seagull, the seagull leader. You look him in the eye. He's the one closest to you. You look him in the eye, and you give him like three or four chips, and you say, that's it. And then she said, I mean, she might be crazy. I don't know. She said that the seagulls remember you, and then they leave you alone because they're like the mafia, basically, for chips. If you give them some, doesn't seem that would work, but I want to try it out now. I nearly went back and got more fish and chips to try that out. I don't know if it's true. They can remember you, and if you're nasty to a seagull, it will chase you down and poo on you and everything. She said it'll remember you, and it'll tell its friends. How does it tell its friends which one you are? That's what I don't understand, but she's the seagull whisperer. Other great news, I got quite an interesting delivery in the post. You know that I do that question about what would you have from any museum if you could have it? And my answer is often the Lewis chessmen, which are these Viking chess pieces. A wonderful sculptor called Richard Eisen, who's richardeisensculptor.co.uk, if you want to use him, has made this for me and sent me this in the post, which is a Lewis chessman with my hideous face. When I opened it up, I thought it was a troll or something, but it's actually my face. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? He claims he discovered it when he was clearing stones, and there's photographic evidence of him digging it up. It's just a coincidence. He's an amazing sculptor. So that's better than the fucking tat you pricks usually send me. Look at that. That's probably worse than money. He's sitting in a high backed armchair with Rahulas to put on the back. That can turn into being a character in Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun, which is coming up on Thursday nights, 8 o'clock. Don't miss it. twitch.tv/RK Herring. Going from strength to strength. It's an amazing thing. And the only other bit of news I've got for you is I've heard this on Twitter, and I can't remember who told me, that Barometer World, which is my favourite museum that I've never visited but really have always wanted to visit, is at least partially closing down. They're not open as a museum anymore. They're still making some barometers. It has parking for up to two cars at Barometer World, which is one of my favourite things on the leaflet. So I'm heartbroken that Barometer World is going. Did you learn nothing from the tales of Robin Hood? Don't close down your major museums. It's a terrible thing. Anyway, look, we've got a fantastic guest for you this week. She's been on before. She's probably best known for being in the audience of the 2016 Fringe show, Come Look at the Baby. That's why we're here, to see her. That's what she's best known for. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the amazing Sophie Duker. Here she is. How are you doing?
I'm thrilled and delighted you brought that baby up.
Thank you. I thought that was quite a good find to discover you were in that, in the audience of that.
In the audience of that. It was a very small audience as well. It was only a very, because I think it was quite a fresh baby, and ethically, not fresh, but still quite fresh.
It didn't still have bits of gunk on it. It wasn't that fresh.
It had been sort of rinsed several times. But I think having a large crowd in to look at the baby would have been possibly traumatic later in life.
So the idea of that show, because there's a Guardian piece about it, and then you're an audience member who gives quite a big quote. I presume you've seen the article.
Yes, I have seen the article.
It's mainly you talking about the show, which is very nice. But you weren't anything to do with the show. You were just an audience.
I wasn't anything to do with the show. No.
So the idea was that they got a baby, and you just could watch it for an hour or something. How long?
I think it was about 40 minutes. Again, babies. Right. It's hard to make babies work.
Well, that's what they do in a Fringe show. If you do 40 minutes, it means you can come back the next year with a full-length show and still be eligible for Best Newcomer. That's probably what that baby was thinking.
Oh, yeah, he was like, yeah.
Come look at a toddler.
They didn't disclose the gender of the baby or anything about the baby.
Okay.
But, it was for less, wouldn't qualify for the award, but about 30 people for about 30 minutes in a darkened room. And then a woman who I think was the baby's grandmother came out, sat with the baby. Sometimes the baby just cried the whole time. Sometimes it was asleep the whole time. But we got
It was on its own. It was literally on its own on stage.
No, I think grandma was watching.
Was watching to make sure it didn't run into any lights.
Yeah. She spoke to, let's say him, in French for a little bit at one point.
Okay.
A clue?
Okay. It's quite an interesting idea for a show. What would you, I wondered if there was anything else that would be interesting to sort of look at. Because you're getting to, I mean, as you said in the piece, I believe, it's quite fascinating to be able to stare at a baby, which you're not usually really able to do.
It's not, it's frowned upon.
It is. Yeah.
What would I like to stare at someone doing? I also think I said in that quote, it's quite interesting because you just then start thinking about your life, which to be fair, I do in every show I see. But I think I maybe watch someone moisturize.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't know if other people do it. I think I'm weird in the ways and where I do it.
Okay. Why do you think you're weird? Let's get into this. Get into the moisturising in depth. Why are you weird with your moisturising?
I think I'm scared of being ashy, so I overcompensate. Okay. I don't want to have those dry elbows or knees. Okay. So I sort of, what would I start off with?
Have you got some moisturiser there, we could make the show here of you moisturising yourself.
Again, so this is only what I don't have lots of the ingredients up here. One I should cover up the brand name. It's quite
do that
intense in case you get into trouble for suggesting lubricants to people. This one is quite an in-depth moisturiser. I used to use cocoa butter, which is amazing, nice. Quite pungent. Yeah. Also experimented with Nivea. Other brands are available. But firstly, there's no moisture without water. So you've got to get wet.
Yeah.
And you sort of dry yourself. Is this relatable content? Sort of dry yourself. But
no, this is good. I didn't see it going this way, but I'm delighted with how it's going.
Dry yourself with a towel. And then you slather on your cream. So you've got liquid. So there's controversy about whether it's the LOC method or the LCO method. So like liquid, cream, and then an oil. So I've used coconut oil, olive oil, jojoba oil, baby oil. That was some of the merch I got from that baby show in Edinburgh.
I don't really moisturize myself. It's amazing. When you look at my skin, it's amazing to think I don't. But I have moisturized a lot of babies. Well, two babies. My own two babies.
Thank you for the clarification.
I'm not moisturized. I don't go around moisturizing other people's babies. Maybe that could be another thing. Maybe you could combine these shows into come and moisturize a baby you don't know.
You don't want a scaly baby.
No. How do you think other people do it? If you seem to have a very good understanding of much more than I do. I just thought you put moisturizer on, you've got a whole...
Yeah, no, you've got to seal it in with the oil. It's because you do that with your hair. I don't think people... I'm going to be frank with you. I don't think other people moisturize.
No.
I think they just get wet.
I think they do. I think people
do moisturize. Do people put on body lotion? Is that what they do?
I think they do. I think otherwise, why does it exist as a product?
But you don't do it.
I don't do it because, I don't care. I'm not, but I've given up hope. And when I was a young man, it wasn't something that men would do. But surely women have always done. I think everyone does it now, don't they?
Yeah, but I think people concentrate on the face. I've seen I've seen ashy knees.
Okay.
Out there.
So the way you're different is that you go into your elbows and knees.
Go into elbows and knees. I do soles of the feet as well because I've got hooves. Wow. I've got hoofy. The hooves are coming through. Yeah. I think I might be part centaur. So I'm trying to... I did a foot peel recently.
Okay.
I didn't know that I talked this much about this either, to be honest. But I'm trying to combat whatever sort of like... I feel like there's like a crone inside me waiting to get out. And I'm just sort of trying to beat it back, like my feet are going to turn into hooves and my skin's going to I think I'm describing aging.
I mean, it will. That will happen. That is what happens. I'm afraid to tell you. It's a terrible, terrible thing. Luckily, you're a very young woman still, but it's coming and it's not nice. My feet are pretty disgraceful. My wife keeps on giving me, for Christmas and birthdays, keeps giving me basically foot sanding material. And that I don't ever use, really. She gave me a little mechanical thing you plug in that then has a like It's basically like something you have in a woodworking shop.
Okay, which, yeah, yeah. Sparks, you know, come off it when you...
I did it once, and it, you know, it did make my feet smoother. But I mean, if I'm going to smooth anything, my feet are the last thing I'm going to smooth down.
Yeah.
I'm not going
to
do it.
Yeah. You don't need to be aerodynamic on the soles of your feet.
No, I mean, they're gross, and I pick them a lot. That's why my wife doesn't.
Okay, like, I sympathise entirely with her now. But
that's why my wife is trying to make me have nothing to pick, basically, off my feet. But I, you know, I have very few pleasures in life anymore. We've really opened up here about quite disgusting things already. Let me ask you this. I'm going to ask you things based on my opening monologue. I want to get this out of the way because I always forget to do it. What have you? Has anyone ever given you advice on how to control an animal of any kind? Secret, I don't know if you were there because I think you arrived part of the way through. When I was on holiday, a woman told me how to stop gulls bothering you for fish and chips.
Wow!
You have to stare them in the eye and then give them a few chips and then they'll leave you alone because they respect you. Has anyone ever given you animal based advice like that gives you a secret into the lifestyle of an animal?
My auntie, one of my many aunties, shared in the family WhatsApp group what I assume is a family secret. And it was like how to get rid of snakes in your home or garden. Okay. So I was like, great. I can't see how it's applicable, but okay. It was a very long message, but basically it's like a 3-step method. I think you get some honey.
Okay.
Maybe you dip a paper in the honey. Mm-hmm. So I imagine it's like squeezy honey and not the kind of honey that turns into like crystal as soon as you get it. Dip it in honey, light the piece of paper with the honey on it. Sounds difficult.
Yeah.
And then wherever it is, this is verbatim, wherever the snake is in the house, it will rush out urgently.
Rush out of the house away from the burning honey or towards the burning honey. I didn't catch where the burning honey go. Is the burning honey a deterrent or an attractant?
I think it's an attractant. So I think it defeats the point of you're like...
Well, no, if you put it somewhere where you want the... If someone could tell me how to get flies out of my fucking house, the good thing about living in London, which I don't any longer, is any insect is dead within 2 hours just because of the basic fumes in London.
They drop out of the air.
But in the countryside, you open some windows when it's as hot as it is. Look at me now. It's hot. The windows are open. Flies fill the house and they're very difficult to get out of the house.
I got a tip recently from an auntie about how to get rid of flies. I think there's a strong, like a 99% chance it's bullshit, but we talked about it for like 20 minutes.
Okay.
Cucumber. She was like, flies. Cucumber. She was like, flies detest the smell of cucumber.
Oh, they don't like cucumber.
They don't like it. So just put cucumber wherever.
Everywhere.
And I was like, wow, because I'm sure I've seen like flies on like salads containing cucumber. Yeah. And also cucumber is 97% water. 90% water. It's quite a lot of water. So it has almost no odour, but flies hate it.
I mean, children hate it. It's a good way of getting rid of children, cucumber. But yeah, I'm not sure. Not sure about that. And also, someone's given me this, has made me into a chess piece. I don't know if you saw that.
I love that. Yes, I did.
What is the straight, I don't know if you get fans giving you presents and things they've made for you. Have you had, I mean, I've had some weird things down the years. What's the strangest or nicest thing a fan has brought to you or given to you?
During lockdown, I had quite a comedy, I don't know if this is a comedy bro moment. I got sent quite a lot of nudes during lockdown.
Okay.
Because I decided on the application Instagram to run a nudes workshop on how to take good nudes, despite having no expertise in the area. I just decided to, and then people sent me nudes.
Okay.
But a lot of them were
That's
funny. They were really funny nudes.
Yeah.
It was really like people had water guns. There were a lot of like belfies, which is like a selfie you take of your butt. I really appreciated it.
Good. That's a good way to get a load of free nudes as well, isn't it? Just say I'm running a competition.
Who
can do the best nudes?
It is important that I state this. I did not solicit nudes. I never asked for nudes. People just thought it would be a nice thing to send. It was a nice thing.
So what you're saying is send any nude photographs, send them to you. You'll enjoy that.
I will. I would never ask directly for nude photographs.
Good.
Of anyone.
And my favourite museum, which I've never been to, but I like the leaflet, Barometer World, is closing down. It's a world of barometers. They've closed it down because the man who runs it is retiring. Do you tend to go to museums when you're touring the country? Do you have a favourite museum?
I I don't think I go to museums that much anymore. I hear about, there's a Museum of Childhood in London, yes, near where, yeah, I live, good, in East London. I haven't been there. It sounds like a sad place.
I was thinking of a different one, but I have been to that one as well. It is, it's quite good. It's quite good. There's a lot of stuff that I actually did a program about the history of the Gollywog and why it was a terrible thing. And the original Gollywog is in that.
Oh, wow.
So that's quite interesting. But there's also, I think it's a nostalgia. You're still young, you see, I think you're too young to be nostalgic for, your youth. But when you become 40 and 50 and then you see something from the 1970s, you go, oh my God, it's amazing. Because there's so much time has passed. And then you get that Proustian rush of seeing a Matchbox toy or something you'd totally forgotten you owned. So it's good for that.
So did you say Matchbox toy?
You know, there were Matchbox cars they used to have called Matchbox.
I've read about these.
Or Mousetrap. I'm trying to think what I saw there that... Because it's when you see like a... You know, things. It's interesting when you've got kids and you see them get like obsessed with a toy and you kind of think that's imprinted in their brain, but then you'll forget about it for 30 years and then it'll be so familiar when you see it again, but also completely unfamiliar. So it's sort of a weird deja vu sort of feeling. And then you get pulled back into the past by seeing this thing that you haven't thought about for 40 years, which you're not able to do that yet. I find it very discombobulating that you're born in 1990 and you are an adult. I find that very hard process in my brain. You're a fully grown, proper adult, 1990, and that seems crazy.
Yeah.
So someone born in 2000 is ostensibly a grown-up.
Sort of an adult.
That's sort of terrifying to me. So, being 30, listen to some of the stuff you've been doing in other podcasts, and you talk about dating quite a lot and the way all those things have changed. But also, I think just through the decades, your attitude to dating will change so much. And being in your 30s is a good time to be, either single or not too heavily attached to other people.
Good advice.
certainly, I think that was the case for me. And it was a good decade. But now you've got all this. I think we probably briefly talked about this last time you were on. But it's a completely different world. When I stopped dating when I met my wife in 2008, and then all the dating stuff arrived online.
Yeah, that's literally when it happened.
It's literally when it all began, and it became very easy. So it was very hard to date. I found in my 20s very hard to date, but in my 30s I got a little bit better at bothering to ask people if they would go on a date with me. I was too shy. But like now you don't have to worry about shyness, do you? Really?
Yeah, you just, it seems so much admin in the recent past to get someone to go on a date with you.
Yes.
And also you just often have to like turn up and wait and not have anything to look. Did you just look at your hands?
Yeah, exactly. It was nuts. Well, and also if you went to the wrong, if you went to the wrong place or, you misunderstood which pub you were meeting in, you'd find out the next day. I remember, I don't think I ever missed a date because of that, but I definitely missed like social engagements because I'd got the wrong pub in my brain. No. And then I went and then no one was there. And then you get home and there might be a message or answer phone or you ring up someone the next day. What happened? Oh, I was in that pub. So yeah, it's crazy how much the world has changed. Basically, since I took myself off the market and everyone, right, it's safe.
Everyone's like,
let's open up dating.
Can begin. There was a giant, did you hear a giant gong when you met your wife?
It must have been, yeah, it must have happened. But I think it's, I heard you talking to Sophie Hagen, that's the Made of Human podcast, which is very well worth listening to, generally speaking, but yours is a great one as well. But you were sort of talking about, I don't know when you recorded this, it may be a couple of years ago, but we talked about it before, the pansexuality and polyamorous relationships. And I think like in your 30s, I just sort of interested. I wonder how many people go beyond their 30s and carry on with that kind of thing. Do you think that's something that will be a phase in your life, or do you think you will get to a point where you want to be with one? I mean, I'm making presumptions. I don't know.
The big question.
But I think it's because I think essentially I was in a poly. I was sort of. It didn't exist as a term.
Okay.
But through my through my thirties, I was dating lots of different people, and sometimes at the same time. And
do they all know that it was at the same time?
Yeah. Well, once I got to about, I realized in my probably 34, 35, the best policy with dating is just completely to be completely honest, because you'll find, especially somewhere like London, because you'll find someone who is, wants exactly the same thing as you, and you don't want to be with someone who doesn't want exactly the same thing as you. So if you want to see lots of people, then say, hey, I'm so, so I did a thing where I dated 50 people in 50 days for one of my shows.
Okay.
And so they all knew I was doing that. But also I did then start having relationships with some of them before it eventually became one of them. But there was a quite a big time where it was, there was quite a big time where it was, you know, quite a few people. But I was completely honest about it. And only one person went, I'm not happy with that. And I said, well, there's nothing I can really do about it for the moment. So we just stopped having a relationship. Yeah,
that seems like a pretty decent way to do it.
Well, it took me quite a long time to realise. And I think, again, I think this is endemic of the past. I think men, well, men and women, but I think men were made to believe that they had to trick women into dating them, or it was some kind, you know, there was, it was a game, or it was whatever, and that you have to lie your way through into relationships. And actually, I think absolutely honesty is, because the back, when it comes back the other way, if someone's honest to you about their, you know, that's much better. If someone comes and says, like, I'm not, you know, I'm seeing someone else, it's much better than finding out they're seeing someone else. So you know, and it's sort of respectful. But, you know, when I got to 40, I kind of thought, well, I've sort of had enough of that.
Yeah. Well, okay. So there's two different things. There's the, like, the polyamory, which I don't identify as polyamorous.
No.
Too many syllables. I am in an open relationship. So nudes, if you want to send them, fine. I'm in an open relationship. And also, I find it really amusing. I was described as a charming pansexual, which sounds... great. I don't think being queer, which is probably how I most easily identify, because it's kind of, I mean, I guess generationally, it might be sometimes a weird word for people to hear, but like in terms of like my generation and the generation below, whatever that is, like it feels quite comfortable to encompass a multitude of ways of being. I don't think that's going to be a phase. But in terms of having other people, as in not being in a monogamous thing, I think I probably quite likely want to have kids. And also I woke up 2 days ago and had a real pain in my shoulder. I don't know if I slept on it. It was weird. I couldn't really turn left like Zoolander for a really long time. And okay. I think as my body starts to degrade, it might be, I just probably will want different things. But
yeah,
I don't,
well, that's basically what I'm saying. Yeah.
But
that's,
I don't
that's
think
happened. It literally happened. My shoulder's really gone bad as well. Yeah. So that might be the first sign.
I don't think it will be like a default thing, but I did read, I mean, this is a fictional book, Girl, Women Are the Witch, a lot of people will have read because it's a fantastic, very well-selling book. And the main character in that, or the first character we meet, it's a series of characters, has arrangements, and she's an older playwright. I thought it was very autobiographical. I don't think this is literally Bernadine Evaristo's life. But I think what I've heard from some people is that once you can kind of get rid of the kids, if you're in a position to have those sort of rage, it doesn't really matter so much. I think when you're young, you're really like, what is this? We need to put a name on it. We haven't put a name on it yet. And I think there might be sort of, I don't know. I'm hoping there might be flexibility when I'm
I think
pooped.
That's very true. And I think, again, it sort of depends on whether, which I've talked about this quite a lot. I find it quite interesting. If people who have their kids young would be my age and they're absolutely in that position where they're basically free, and sometimes free of their partner, but as well as their kids. But you know, they're, so they do that. They're doing a sort of second wave of dating now, which I think is quite, you know, I'm going to be sort of 70 when my kids leave home. So I think it's probably, you know, if I'm still alive, then I think that'll be all I'm worrying about is still carrying on breathing rather than looking for somebody else to waste my time
to,
with.
Like, pump the, I mean, it will be 20. 20-something, there'll be some sort of automated system for breathing and other things as well, I'm sure.
There will. And there'll be sex robots, which I'll be into that. Yeah. I'm just trying to work my wife around to that. As soon as they're available and realistic, I've just got to convince her that that's okay.
Yeah, it's just
that's my plan.
Alexa worked out well for us. Why not? Andrea?
It could happen. Right. So I wanted to talk. I'm not sure this is a real thing. This is something I picked up from watching on Roast Battle, but often the facts are true in this. is it true that you wrote Harry Potter fan fiction as a youngster, a younger person?
As a younger person, I absolutely did write Harry Potter fan fiction. Yes, I wrote erotic. It wasn't solely erotic. There was also a lot of heart in it.
How old were you when you were doing this?
So I think I was from the ages of like 14 to 17. It coincided with a long summer, which was like a gap between the publication of two Harry Potter books, which was a really fertile time for the Harry Potter fandom because people had 2 years basically to wait for new canon. So they just wrote loads of stories. I was very into it.
That's quite early for fan fiction. So I suppose maybe it's not. People have been doing fan fiction for a while, I guess. Yeah, carry on.
Yeah, it was. I
was thinking you were one of the first, but maybe Twilight. Twilight was.
Oh, Twilight was later. Was
sort of fan. Yeah. So that was
actually fan fiction that people turned into a franchise by enabling this. Yeah, and also Fifty Shades of Grey, not fan fiction, but I mean, whoever wrote it has definitely written fan fiction. I wanted to take the piss out of it in my comedy. I wanted, like, when I was making my new show, I wanted to, like, find some fan fiction and be like, oh, how embarrassing. And I went back to my old account and read to my fan fiction and was just like, this is too good. I can't. The work has too much inherent merit.
You should publish. Publish and be damned.
I think also maybe not a great time to associate myself with J.K. Rowling.
Fair enough.
Flagrantly steal from J.K. Rowling's creations. But, yeah.
Was it Harry bumming Ron? That's what I'm guessing. That's most of it. That's
can
what
I ask
90%.
You, can I ask you a personal question? If you were going to write about characters bumming in the Harry Potter world, would you choose Harry and Ron?
Yeah.
No!
They're the only two I really know. I know Hermione. I mean, it seems they're all kids. I mean, if maybe in the last, right at the end.
Yeah, the last book. Okay, adults. I see you have to talk about the last book. But they're adults technically from book six.
Okay.
Right,
they're at the train station with their own kids. That's what I would write about. And then Harry, when the train's going out, Harry bums Ron.
Harry bums Ron. Yeah. As the train pulls out of King's Cross.
Good, there you go.
I guarantee you that exists. Harry Ron is quite a like fluffy ship, like relationship pairing, because they're already friends. Like the Gryffindor dormitories sound like they're very small. The architectural planning of Hogwarts is a madness anyway. Harry Draco is a classic ship. Okay. I was writing mainly Marauder era, so that's Harry's parents, so like Sirius Black. His uncle that went to Azkaban, and Remus Lupin, the bookish werewolf.
Yeah, I know. I'm aware of these characters. Surprisingly, my wife's a big fan of Harry Potter.
Oh, nice.
So I picked up quite a lot of it. I'm very good at Trivial Pursuits, and that is the name of that game. But one Christmas, I had to play Harry Potter Trivial Pursuits against my in-laws and my wife, and I got one question right. They all did very well. So I'm aware of who those are.
I'm proud of you. Yeah.
So who was doing, was it Harry Potter's mum and dad just, was it about them having, that's not very interesting.
No, it was about Remus and Sirius. They were all part of this. They wrote the Marauder's Map and they basically used it to find the Room of Requirement to go and bum in. It was the 70s, like everyone was drinking fire whiskey and like smoking spliffs.
They weren't worried about AIDS in those days. I suppose they were magic. They could have magicked the AIDS away.
They had healers as well. I wish you hadn't started me talking about Harry Potter because I know too much about it. There's like very like there's big parallels. So like in the Muggle world and the Wizarding world. So like there was a war, like at the same time as World War II was like the second Wizarding. No, maybe the first Wizarding War. Oh no, there's going to be some person sitting there absolutely fuming, being like, "What is she talking about?" There might have been an AIDS crisis parallel in the Wizarding world. JK will probably come out and say that that's what she intended.
That's what it was about. They could just magic it, though. That's why Harry Potter doesn't work for me. They magic it. Just magic it.
Yeah, do some magic. Different levels.
Just magic. Just do it. Just do some magic.
There's levels of magic.
Do the next level. If they've done level 3, do level 4.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
That's it. Do some magic.
You're ruining the joy.
Do some magic. I've not got them all bumming each other. I'm enjoying the wonderful fairy tale. Okay. I've got the same size hands as Hermione from Harry Potter.
Literal Emma Watson?
Yeah, I've got exactly the same size hands as her. I like the way you put your hands up.
Yeah, put my hand up to the screen. Is that true? Have you shaken a hand?
It is, because I went to Harry Potter World and they've got the handprints of the stars in the thing, and I put my hands in, perfect fit. Look at that! Look at that horrible stubby hand.
Wow!
That is Emma Watson's exact, absolute every crevice of her handprint filled by my hand.
Beautiful. You should see her hand standing. And
well, that's what I want to do. If you do anything with this idea, if you make a film of it, and you need that her wanking someone off,
hand.
Yeah, just my hand will come in. That's what it would be like.
I'm sorry, Emma will do the role, but she won't have her hands in shot.
She won't wank. If she won't wank off a werewolf or something, go get Richard Herring in, he'll do it. Yeah. I'll wank off a werewolf if the money's right. Be an interesting thing to do. Well, that's you know, it's interesting. That's where you. And then you went on to study English.
Modern languages.
Oh, modern languages.
Yes, very much a dual threat. Went off to study languages, English and modern language at Oxford, which is a little bit like Harry Potter.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Is that what attracted you to the university?
Yeah.
That you
could... I'll just get into a tutorial and be like, just magic it.
Sort of what I did.
Yeah.
When I did at university, I just copied people's essays. So that was in a way magicking the essay, wasn't it? Just by copying whoever was in there the week before, I just copied their essay and then read it out. And often hadn't read it when I was copying. So it was very interesting when I got asked questions about it. Somehow I got through. What a wasted opportunity. What a waste of a good education that was. Mm-hmm. Terrible, terrible person I am. Right. I'm going to ask you. What else am I going to ask? Well, I want to ask you this. I keep forgetting to ask you, ask my guests about this, because I'm quite obsessed with this now. My wife, I've discovered only since marrying her, opens hard-boiled eggs, like soft-boiled eggs that she's going to eat rather, you know, so like dippy eggs. She cracks it all and then peels off the shell entirely, whereas I just lop the top off and then you've got a spoon. You can How do you eat soft-boiled eggs?
I don't. I find I didn't really understand what I never had dippy eggs. Right. All my eggs were like cooked through to within an inch of their lives. I never had the like soft eggy egg in the middle. But okay. I do think that I would kind of be more on your wife's, because you know when you peel a grape with your teeth when you've got nothing better to do, like I think peeling an egg,
yeah, but that's different because you throw the thing away. Like if you peel a softboard egg, lots of, and then she's teaching what I wouldn't mind, but she's teaching my kids to do it her way.
Oh right.
When you peel it off, all the bits of eggshell fall all over the place into your soldiers, into egg.
Yeah, that's quite bad.
And then you're eating bits of egg. You just lop off. I don't care which
but
end
if you
that
lop
way
the
up
top off, you lose all the egg.
You don't. You lop the top bit of the. You just work out where the yolk's going to start. You just top, and then you can go and scoop the bit out, so you can still eat the white that's in there. But then you've got your yolk, and you can just immediately dip it into the yolk. It's absolutely the way to eat eggs and soft-boiled eggs.
How do you lop it? Lop it with a knife?
No, you get your spoon that you're going to eat. So your spoon you're eating with, take the top off, just put that aside, take out the white if you want. Don't have to. Then dip in your soldiers. There's no eggshell all over them. My kids are being taught this. I didn't care until my kid, then it's being passed on to another generation. I wouldn't have married if I'd known. That's all I'm going to say. There's things you discover when you get married that my wife can't sing. I didn't know that. She kept that secret until we were married, then started singing and she can't sing.
Singing and peeling eggs.
Yeah, those two, they're important things. Just get to know someone. I rushed into marriage after 4 years. I should have waited another 7 or 8 years.
Just be like,
until I really knew her.
Take her to lots of sing-along musicals. Take her to screenings of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That's just my advice.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Good. I'm going to ask you some emergency questions and I'm going to get back onto... It's so hot. It's good. It's going well. I'm very much enjoying myself.
I'm glad.
It's nice to be back. It's good to have had a couple of weeks off. It's fun being back. What is the most beautiful thing that you've ever destroyed, Sophie?
Oh, God. What's the most beautiful thing that I have ever destroyed?
They're hard. They're not easy questions.
This is such... I mean, I feel like your Wi-Fi may have butchered a song or two.
Yeah. Is it taking time because you've got so many choices or are you struggling?
No, because I want to think of a really genuine, I want to think of a time when I like crushed someone's like spirit.
Yeah, well, that's certainly, I'm sure you've done that. And we've all done that is what I'm saying. But I'm sure you've.
I think maybe.
Yeah.
So my teacher when I was in year three, she came in for her first day of school, I think because she was at a girls' school. She thought that she had to dress like she was Maria von Trapp. Look, I used her married name and not her maiden name. Wow. I thought she had to dress as Maria von Trapp, and she was wearing this sort of orange ball gown. I mean, that's not how Maria dressed. We all know Maria for her sense of style, but it was a sort of like it was. Yeah, she was like a governess. She was dressed like a governess, and it was like sort of balloony, and it was really orange. And then later on in the year, 9 months have passed. We all have to write down like our favorite memories of the year. So that the headmistress could read them in assembly. And one of them was like, what is your funniest moment in the year? Funniest memory? And I said, when my teacher came to school for the first day dressed like a pumpkin, but then submitted it to the same teacher. Because I was like, that was very funny.
Yeah.
And I think, I just think I ruined her innocence as a young...
Oh, God.
I don't want to crush her orange dreams. I mean,
that's
she
tough.
Never...
Yeah, she never did. We had school magazines and school reviews where we were quite cruel about teachers. And we did a sixth form sort of secret comedy show, but somehow the teachers found out about it. And one of the teachers, we did this crimes against humanity that the teachers had done. And one of them was for one of our teachers who we said had foul sewer breath.
Oh.
And then he was the one who had to come and tell us all off. And then the next lesson we went into, he was sort of, which I think was really weird of him, he was really ostentatiously eating loads of polos during the lesson. Which sort of makes you think, you know, it's not like going, oh, you've got to me, isn't it? That's sort of going,
yeah.
Because I don't think he really, I mean, I think he might have once had smelly breath, you know, he's like an older man. But he wasn't like a genuine thing. But for him to come in and then like just really eat polos at that next lesson.
That's a sort weird of like choice.
Well, it's sort of like you've been crushed, doesn't it? It's sort of like we defeated him and then he was going, well, all right, it's not like I'll show you. It's like...
You're right about me.
Yeah. It's like, you've got me and I'm feel terrible. I still feel bad about it. He's dead now, but, you know, what can you do?
Yeah. He ate too many polo mints.
He choked to death.
Maybe he was kissed to death. Oh, no, that's smints, isn't it? No smint, no kiss.
Okay, yeah. But, you know, it might have made him more attractive to the female teachers of the Kings of Wessex in Cheddar. It might have done. But, yeah, we were quite rude about a lot of teachers. And I think you don't think, as a student, you think they're kind of impervious.
Yeah, they don't
have
feelings.
Yeah.
They just perform a fuck. They like not in a mean way, but like you think they love school. Well, not love school, but that's what they're all about. Some teachers very clearly don't love school, but you think that's the only thing. That's the most important thing to them.
Sad. Made me sad now thinking about that. I'll ask you one more emergency question. I'm looking for my glasses. They're on my head. Let's see what we come up with. Well, I don't think I asked you this last time. Let's ask you this because that's what where this comes from. If you could have one, it's another museum question.
Oh, no.
If you could have one item from any art gallery or museum in the world, if they all got together and said, we're going to let you have one thing to keep, you can take out of any of our museums and it's yours, what one thing would you like from the world's art galleries or museums? So it can be an artifact or a work of art or anything you like.
I heard you asking this and I was like, I'll think of an answer.
You didn't think of one?
No, I did think of one, but I don't really know what it's called. I think it's called The Gardener, and I think it's a Monet, and I think it made me cry. I mean, all these things are true. It might not be a Monet. Yeah. Monet? It's called The Gardener. It's like a man looking, and I think it's French, but I saw it in Italy. I was about to go on a lesbian cruise. It's not by Monet, by any, is it? Absolutely not.
I'm Gardener. Just getting a magazine called The Gardener. Oh, Gardener by the Met Museum.
It's now
Charles Sorat. George Sorat.
Maybe.
It's like it.
But I saw this picture of a man hanging in a museum in Italy before I got on a lesbian cruise. And
is it that one?
It is not that one.
Not that one.
It is. Let me see if I can find it.
Oh, I'm interested.
Oh, is it called? Is it called The Gardener or The Worker?
Oh, I think I might found have got it. One here.
It's like a man.
I think I just saw it.
A man in a hat.
Oh, it looks like a Van Gogh.
It's a Van Gogh. That's what I meant.
Yes, that's good. Well, Van Gogh's always a good one to go for because the resale value is good. If you end up not liking it,
yeah. But it made me cry. Like I looked at that man and I cried in front of him in a museum. Or if it's a fictional museum, it would be the museum from Black Panther. The fictional museum in London in Black Panther. And I would take Michael B. Jordan.
Okay.
But specifically in that film. Check. Yes, that is it. That's my that's my guy, my gardener guy, Van Gogh.
You cry.
He just looks...
And I like his...
This floppy little sad. Hat and his kind eyes.
Kind, but... One of them sort of slightly elongated. Looks like he might need the toilet to me.
Yeah, looks slightly stoned.
He does. He probably is. Poor old Van Gogh. He had a tough time. Oh. I mean, that's not him. That's just one of the things he drew.
He just drew it.
Very good. Lovely. Right, what else have I got for you? Nothing. That's it. It's all over.
That is true in more ways than one.
I just wanted to dick around with you because we talked quite about serious stuff last time, but I just wanted to talk to you quickly about the news quiz, which you were on during, was it during lockdown?
It was during lockdown,
and during
yeah.
the Black Lives, you were sort of a last minute fly-in guest.
I was parachuted in, a sort of action hero. Yes. Do you just want me to, I'll just talk about it. I have to say, though, that I literally don't have to say it, that I think the news quiz handled that really spectacularly. Top points, the news quiz. It was like a really weird time. If anyone can remember, and you should do, because if you're listening to this, you're an adult, that point in lockdown where Black Lives Matter sort of kicked off was a very stressful, intense time. And I basically was asked to do the news quiz at very short notice after having already done an episode in the series, and I sort of immediately knew that it was to speak about Black Lives Matter, but my agent was just like, oh great, just a last minute booking. And then I found out they told me, I think a few days later, I think I got booked like the week before, so it was quite a quick turnaround, but they told me shortly after that I was replacing another comic who was a white man, and it would have been an all white panel, and that's why I'd been booked. And I sort of decided at that point that there felt like it's always kind of your hands are tied when you have basically a social media account, because it is impossible to be vocal at all times or be a vocal about everything. And also when something is very important to you, there's sort of a need to speak, but to do it in the right way. And I felt like the news quiz was some like small thing that I could have control over in the way that I sort of access this traumatic event. And that sort of affected what I decided to do afterwards.
Yes. Which was, so you said you wouldn't go on again unless they were employing other black people on the show.
Yeah.
In some capacity.
So,
presumably.
I did the show and I did, said I didn't have to speak about Black Lives Matter if I didn't want to, which was very kind, but sort of defeats the point of having me on. But luckily I did want to talk about Black Lives Matter, and it was the first question. They gave me space to talk about it. But then I said that I would be donating my fee because I feel weird. I don't know. I personally felt weird about sort of, and I think this is a very personal thing. I think it's very right to have people to comment on bad things and traumatic things and to make money because people should be compensated for their time and their skills and their work. But I didn't want to. I wanted to donate my fee, and I said I wouldn't go back on the show again unless, there was another black person on the show, because there's so often that I've been on shows where that just hasn't been, there's been no kind of other person of color even editorially involved at all, whether that's as a writer or as a producer or as like one talent. So it's often, it feels like a bigger burden if you are the only person representing a particular perspective.
Sure. I mean, I suppose it would just, if you're saying you won't go on if you're the only one, if everyone does that, then no one can go on because there's nobody on. It sort of feels like, you know, I absolutely understand what you're saying and I agree with why you've done it, but I guess it sort of might, to some people, might sound like a weird decision in terms of the first step is to have one person. And but I completely get that what you're saying, and there should be, absolutely, on a major show, there should be someone at least like on the writing team. People of different perspectives. Again, it's just getting that different perspective, which, you know, the Radio 4 is has weirdly been, I think, very good at promoting female talent.
Yeah.
I think, you know, in comedy shows, I think it's been really excellent, way ahead of TV, in that, and that you would often go on panel shows and there'd be more women than men, which you would never get on TV, and or certainly at, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago. But yeah, I mean, it is, I mean, I guess Radio 4 is that very, you know, it's a sort of slightly close.
Yeah, it sort of feels, I think there are some brilliant, like, it's been amazing at Radio. Like, I really enjoy working on the news quiz. I really like the producer at the time. One of the producers is a woman, the head of BBC Sounds is an amazing woman. And that's really cool. I think it's just that sometimes because things are so slow, things are so slow, and I think people get excited. Like, I don't know if I am in a position to make that sort of thing, but I think I felt like I trust these people. I've worked with these people before. I've worked in the BBC, like behind the camera, in front of the camera, on all sorts of shows before, and I feel like I'm someone who's like reasonably trusted to do a good job. But I still see like the same people kind of cycling between jobs. And I'm like, there is space, there is resources to give someone to give someone a chance, to give other people a chance, and not just like, not just use.
Has it worked? Have they changed their part? Have they done anything about this as a result? Or are they just now not having, having you on either?
Some of that person, the oldest. No, they, what I really liked is that they didn't sort of, they have, I think, had, I'm not sure about this, they may have had like a black writer, they've had like black talent involved in the news quiz, not on that episode. And I'm not sure about the episode that I previously did, but I think they are encouraging black and POC talent. And then I was emailed afterwards, and they said that they basically understood exactly why I did it, and they didn't sort of respond on Twitter because they wanted to give me like sort of space to have that reaction, and they would really like to have me back and aim to make it like an easy yes on the terms I outlined. And I just think it was really gracious and classy, and it's, they're definitely not the worst culprit, they're not the worst culprits for it, but it's just in having to be a spokesperson at that time when I know a lot of, particularly who I know in like the media, a lot of black women were so exhausted, were getting asked by so many different outlets to speak and do things and do labor. Like, it felt like, it felt like a time and an appropriate platform to like sort of vocalize that.
Good. Yeah. No, I think so. I think it was, like you say, it's every step counts, and it doesn't have to be the worst offender to be picked up on that kind of thing, I think, as well. You know, I think it is something that everyone has to, I hope that everyone sort of made, like, companies and all the channels and everything were making these gestures and saying that they were going to change the way they did things. So it'd be interesting to see if that happens once it's not like bang in the middle of the news, but I hope it's
I think it's like what I try and do is like I'm not trying to be like I'm such a good person, but you try and bring other people in, you know what I mean? Like, so many like white male comedians have been like given me a shot, like you put me on this show, but like people have been like I rate what you're doing. Like, so many people that don't necessarily like tick all the same identity boxes have given me chances. Also, lots of black comedians and comedians of color have like given me chances, but they don't tend to always have the same power and the same platforms. So it's kind of like, if I can turn down a job that I don't think I need to do again and make sure that some, or to kind of strongly recommend that someone else gets that chance, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's great. And what I like about the internet, I think, is it sort of is a more level playing field in that people can come up with their own ideas and do them, and no one's stopping anybody getting ideas out there. And you've been doing, I mean, you're on a lot of other people's podcasts. You did a podcast, I think it's finished with the BBC, called Grown Up.
Yes, Grown Up Land.
Was that this year? Did that finish?
That finished recently. So we recorded the last episodes in lockdown. And that was,
but there was like 70. I listened to one of them. There's 70. 70
there were
episodes
a lot. I didn't do all of them. There were two hosts that were kind of the OG host that started with Ned Sedgwick, who's the third main host. That was Mae Martin and Bisha K. Ali. And they both moved on at the same time. And me and Heidi Regan, a great podcaster and comedian, took over. So basically, right. I'm sure I'm doing a Netflix series or something because. Following in May's, I don't know how big May's feet are. I'd say size six.
If you have the exact, you have to have the exact same size and shape feet.
If she's gone to Harry Potter world, yeah.
Yeah, then you can take her. I'm looking for Emma Watson's work, but no one's given it to me at the moment. But it's sort of interesting because there seems to be a lot of, I mean, I think this was also true of me. I was a very childish man who took a lot. I don't think, I can't really claim to have grown up, but I think certainly in my 30s and 40s, I was still sort of struggling with the idea of being a grown up. But that sort of seems to be there seems to be quite a few shows about people in their 20s and 30s still not understanding how to cope in the adult world, which is sort of what that podcast is about.
I think it's kind of in the latter two series, which are the ones that I worked on, I think it's sort of slightly shifted. So I think initially it was just kind of like, oh, it's like the grown-up world of Radio 4 and like, what does this teach us about friendship? In the last two series, it was kind of like a bit like, what is the kind of world that I want to be a grown-up in, and like, how do I sort of work it? Like, we had a great producer on that show, and we had some really interesting guests like talking about the brain or like, and it was sort of trying to hack like, I don't know, but probably the eternal question underlying everything, but like, what are the good reasons for being grown up? Like, what are we making? What are we doing? Like, how should we do it? But really, it was just, you know, chatting shit in a podcast studio.
Yeah, that's all podcasts are. That's all. You did say you have worked on sort of both sides of the camera. You worked on, well, and literally on some of the shows. So you've been a producer on shows and then been a sort of guest on shows. So Frankie Boyle's New World Order, you're an assistant producer on.
Yes.
What does the assistant producer do on Frankie Boyle's?
What does the assistant producer? Well, there's the, I was like a writer's room AP, which is a different role sort of entirely. Oh God, I'm like, okay. So yeah, I was a writer's room AP, and that involves sitting in a room and sort of being a sort of go-between production, who are like people working on making the show, and the writer's room, which is where all the like magic happens. And like a lot of sort of clips and obviously topical stuff gets fed into the room, and like sort of some weird, it doesn't always seem like the stuff that is happening is conducive to the show. But then I think the show is brilliant. I'm very biased, but I think the show is great. And it's quite scary working on a show which has someone's name on it. That's and like not knowing that person. But I think but I think Frankie's great.
Yeah.
He
seems to be doing a lot. He's getting a lot of women on the show, I've noticed, and you know, and being very good at employing different voices.
He is good at employing different voices. I think it's like, so the thing about Frankie is that he's sort of like, in the before times, when I wasn't really like sure who Frankie was and stuff, I sort of dimly had an idea that he's like had this like sort of controversial reputation. But now I think like a lot of people are like, who's this like woke dad?
I think he's definitely things have definitely changed a little bit for him. I think he fell out. Well, I fell out with him. I think I criticized a joke he did about just. I think he doesn't talk to me anymore. But I'm a massive fan. I criticized like two of his jokes about disability, and I think he didn't like it. I think that's what it's about, but I don't know. But he was actually quite a champion of me early on as well. Well, you know, that sounds weird because I'm older than him, but he got me on like some of his shows, and you know, was sort of a fan of mine. So I think I don't know, he seems to have flipped, but he wrote a book in which he sort of talked about me and Josie Long being raped and stuff like this.
It was about
7 or 8 years ago, and now he is quite a sort of, it wasn't so bad for me, but I know Josie was sort of like found it a bit weird.
Now
he's sort of turned around and does seem to have left that behind.
I think it's really interesting, like that sort of invective that so like many like comics do or like have done, which can end up being like misogynistic or like really, or just like, and I think it's just like, I don't know. I've honestly got nothing but good things to say about Frankie, but I think that sort of capacity, I'm trying to say something really wise. I think that what I really love about Frankie is that I think he's just, that his like sort of invective and his like anger comes from a place of like really believing the things that he says. And I think a lot of people don't, but I think that what he's managed to do recently and like when I've been working with him is kind of have a consciousness about like what that means and what his place is in it. And also his like authority to say certain things.
No, I think that's true. He's a brilliant writer when he writes his columns as well.
Oh my
especially. God. They're so incredibly crafted. And I think that's it. It's about directing, you know. I could make the same criticism of myself and a lot of comedians from 10, 15 years ago in saying the material you were doing was, you know, stuff that you wouldn't do now. So I'm absolutely not knocking him for that, because I think. That's for me, the learning process is change. You know, if people change their mind and start doing it the right way, then that's a good thing rather than going, but you did it the wrong way in the old days or whatever, which I think you could make.
Yeah.
Well, I also think, 10 years ago, comedy was like in a really different place.
Oh, yeah. I'm so grateful. I mean, yeah, I'm grateful not to be doing comedy then, although that is exactly what I mean. I just think it was, it's a different place. You have to have different skills. You get good at different things. And so, yeah, we've all got kind of weak spots because of the particular environment that we sort of were hatched in, but hopefully still funny.
Yeah. Well, you know, definitely. Well, that's what, and you worked on, you wrote for Horrible Histories.
Yes.
You've done quite a lot of it because you're a program associate on some things and writers on the same, but that's the same job, right?
Yeah. It's weird because I think I get very offended when people think that I'm like a program, like when people don't think I've worked in TV because I've done, like, I've got like the bruises from Tribe. I've worked in like lots of different types of TV and really like slugged at it. It's sort of, yeah, and I also didn't tell people I was a comic for ages, which was fine because I wasn't, you know, doing anything. I didn't have any sort of, I think program associate, I've never had that as a job title. I think it's probably just like an AP or a writer or maybe producing something else.
But because I think a lot of people, they try to make out that a lot of these panel shows don't have writers on them when they do have writers yeah. and they're largely written.
It's so, so weird. Like I.
So, but is it then weird going because you've done that? You've been in the writers' room for some of them and then been on the panel for some of them, which is obviously a transition a few people make. Is that a weird transition?
When I'm on a show, so I think with Frankie, that was quite weird because it sort of felt like I've done this, I've been here, I've like been in the audience, sort of like being like an extra body in the room, laughing if like a sort of weird moment has been like dropped. So that felt quite cool. I really love working with other like comics and writers, and I think it's when people try and make out that they are this one genius machine. Like obviously you are, but like you need to other people, like you get that from other people. Like comics love, even if they hate people, they love people because that's where they get it all from. So I've never been like that shy about saying that I work with other people. But I think it means different things. Like I think people have this sort of like paranoia about a really constructed comic that doesn't write their own jokes and doesn't have their own voice and is sort of like an amalgamation of lots of people. And I think that doesn't, like the people who are good, that doesn't happen. Like, you know, like they've got that sort of distinctiveness. Yeah. I don't know. There's like so many good people in, I don't know.
Well, it's like, but there are so, the thing with it is there's a lot of people on so many shows, they couldn't possibly write all their own. They haven't got literal time to write the material for all the shows.
That's the thing. I'm just like, I don't know how someone like Jimmy Carr could just everything that he says, because he's like on everything, but like he has such a definite like voice and like knows what he does. And also like, I don't know. Even now I'm like, I'm not sure I'm allowed to say the people that I've written for, but I really like, I have written for some big people and it's so nice, particularly getting to write for women, which I have not done as much because of the paucity, another word I'm going to use again, of women who, I don't know, I guess like, I don't know. I think actually there's loads of great women, but I don't know, maybe they write, I don't know. What am I saying? When you're writing for someone and you're like, I know I want to be able to think like you, I think it's really great for teaching you how to write because you can write loads of stuff and be like, is this offensive? Like that I've written like, oh, I'm like this and I, you know, love cock or like whatever. You can guess who that is, Josie Long. I've never written for Josie. She's one of my, I love Josie so much. I don't know if she ever has anyone writing for her.
I wouldn't have thought so. I don't think she would. I think it's also a little bit, you know, I'm a bit old school about it because when I do those shows, I always want to write my own stuff. So I don't take stuff out of the pile of jokes that you can take stuff out of. But then I don't get to do that many of them either. So it's like, I've got time. Do I ever think about it? Or just, I sort of feel if you're on those shows a little bit, you should be improvising anyway. So I think even preparing stuff seems to be cheating to me a little bit.
I thought it was all improvised when I first saw it. I loved the improv of it. And like, when I'm like for something like Mock the Week, I'm not going to be like, I just get up there and say what comes into my head. Cause I need to be like, how do you spell T-shirt? What jokes can I make about this? But like, I think being a writer, I feel a bit relaxed about it. I know newer comics that have gone on shows like that and are really intimidated because it just seems like this huge alien thing. And I'm like, a studio has been like a job for me so much of the time, like 15-hour days have been like, so I'm just like, everyone wants you to do well. But also I'm like, this is a skill that I want to write stuff. When I'm like going on those shows, like I definitely get like another writer to like bounce off. But I think I've seen very funny people over prepare, which they don't need to because they're just so scared of like the television beast.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, you know, but it's also you get your shit. So unless you get established, you get your shot and you feel like if you mess up your shot, that could be the end of it. So it's a very difficult thing. I'd like to see more people getting the opportunity rather than giving the same people hundreds and hundreds of jobs. It'd be nice to spread that out a little bit and put newer faces and on the TV. But, you know, it's part of a big problem now as we're with everything that's been going on. I don't want to get into all that again with the COVID destruction of the comedy industry. But Do you have work at the moment? Are you doing so? Is there stuff we could look forward to,
or is there stuff you've got to do? Yes. I am very hashtag blessed. I think it's weird because there's like sort of. It's always been weird and competitive in comedy. You've always like got these people who you love and you see all the time, but you're just like, oh, you got that thing. Why don't I have that? And you sort of die inside. I have been writing on stuff in lockdown. I am also going to be on the new series of a show that is starting up in the autumn, possibly featuring someone that we've already discussed. So that's going to be really fun. Yeah. What am I doing? Spitting Image. I'm writing on that.
I've been trying to write for that this week. I want to write a sketch about Prince Andrew using a Spitting Image puppet to grope women. It seems like there has to be a sketch about that. I just emailed and said, has anyone written this sketch? Because it seems obvious you have to do it. But it's also very much... it's Prince Andrew, who I've done a lot of stuff about, and ventriloquist dummies and dummies, which I do, puppets, which I do stuff about. Amazing. But actually, I'm finding it quite hard to do it, to write. I wrote on the...
Too sexy.
Like the last couple of series of Spitting Image when it was on in the 1990s. So it would be quite nice to go back. But, you know, but it's what you're talking about. You know, when you start out, A, you are writing that sort of stuff all the time. You know, you're doing so many jobs and you learn how to write really succinct sketches that will work on a TV format, and then you know you spent 30 years forgetting all that and trying to do your own thing. It's actually quite hard to go back and write a sketch that will work on Spitting Image, and it might not work, but I'm going to try and do it. I've been trying to do it on Monday and didn't get very far, but I'll try and do it on Thursday. But that's quite a long way down the line, isn't it?
That's coming up. But I think it's just like, I don't know, I now feel like I'm very much in the like try to do as much as possible see what sticks, throw stuff at all the walls. And it's quite like, I don't know, I think it would be quite nice to look back when I have 40 years to look back on and be like, I've earned the room to do something that's quite weird and sounds brilliant that I wouldn't have dared to do like 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, but it's also the way you got it. I was talking to someone, I did a little conflab with some students in Newcastle who wanted to, you know, we're trying to get me to go up there, but actually now with the Zoom and everything, it's easier to do these things from home, which I like. But they were all talking about should you start writing sitcoms for radio? And I go, you know, you've got to start writing sketches for radio. You've got to start really small. You know, writing sitcoms.
One-liners for radio and send them to Newcastle.
You've got to start smaller. And actually by learning to do all that stuff, I do realise, right, there's a show called Weekending was the first thing I wrote for, which was a topical show that had been going for years. I found out that, who was it? Graham Garden, who's in The Goodies, wrote for Weekending as well. That's how long it was going, that Graham Garden wrote for the second series of Weekending, and I wrote for series like 400 or something. I hated doing that show, but the discipline it gave you in learning how to write a 30-second sketch or a 20-second sketch or a 5-second sketch just was incredibly helpful in terms of doing that. But it is very difficult to then go back and just not make your stuff too esoteric. To be honest, the problem with my sketch is that it's going to be hard for a puppet to hold another puppet in a way that he can...
Maybe he could hold a person for the puppet.
Maybe he can. But it's like, you know, he's trying to blame the puppet for everything that he's done, you know. It's like an obvious...
Let's not talk about it because it's going to be on television.
It could be on television. Let's workshop it now. No, let's not. Good. Well, I'm glad that you've managed to get on the lifeboats and get some work.
Yeah.
As the comedy industry crashes to the ground.
I was keep refusing work until they put another black person. I'm like, it's fine. Put one black person in the news quiz. It can just be me everywhere else.
Look, it's been really lovely to talk to you again. I'm glad things are going so well. We'll meet up again in another year and find out how you're doing. I'll talk, if I can live another 20 years, I want to talk to you in 20 years' time to find out about your comedy and also about your whether you've settled down in a monogamous relationship or settled down in a monogamous relationship and then left. I'm very interested in finding out both of those things. So I have to stay alive so I can interview you in 20
years. You've got to stay alive. I feel like Billie Eilish. She gets interviewed every year by Vogue, and honestly, I'd rather... I'd rather do this. So
okay, well, that's good. Well, we'll have you back. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Sophie Dugas. See you. We're back next week with Sindhu V. Ooh. Thank you very much. Goodbye. You have been listening to Rahulastapar with me, Rich Terring, and my guest, Sophie Dugas. Thank you to Pest, who are the people who play this music. I don't know if I've mentioned that before. Thank you very much to Chris Evans, not that one, who I'm very much indebted to for all the work he's put into making these shows work during this difficult time. Thank you very much also to everyone at Acast and the British Comedy Guide and Twitch for supporting us in our endeavours. I also would like to thank Ben Walker, our usual producer, and I would like to thank my mum and dad and Donkey from Ali and Herring's Twitch of Fun. Do tune in to twitch.tv/RKHerring at any time. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Head to rahulastapar.co.uk/Kickstarter to support our Kickstarter campaign and help live comedy. GoFasterStripe.com/badges if you want to get some badges and help us carry on. Thanks for watching and listening. Goodbye, my fan friends. See you on twitch.tv/RKHerring. Why not, my fan friends, my fan friends?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.